Well, good morning, everybody. 4 minutes after the hour of 10 o'clock, and for the next couple of hours here on KKNT in Phoenix, we're going to be talking about car repair questions and problems, and do I do this, and I was told I needed that, and all those kinds of things. I've been on the radio since 1988, and I've been working on cars since 1968, and I've owned my own shop since 1979. I'm not here to tell you about my shop. I'm not here to drive your business to my shop. As a matter of fact, I have a list of shops all over the Phoenix area that I'm willing to send you to, geographically located close to where you might be. This is about car questions and helping you folks to understand us, the guys that work on your car, and all the jargon that we talk about. 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. This portion of Under the Hood is brought to you by Action Auto. Tom and I have been friends since 1983. He's at I-17 in Deer Valley, northwest corner. He's a full-service repair shop, independent repair shop. He has ASE-certified master mechanics. Of course, I'm one, but he has some that work for him. And Tom knows right from wrong. So if you're anywhere near I-17 in Deer Valley and you're looking for a car repair shop, somebody that will treat you fairly and knows how to fix cars, then Action Auto would be the place I'd go. Good morning, Patrick. How are you this morning?
Good morning. I am alive and well. It's a beautiful day. How are you?
You know, I'm right alongside you, buddy, alive and well. She's not mad at me. The cops aren't looking for me. And the biggest problem I got right now is my septic system's got a light on. So I'll deal with that after we're done.
Oh, that's no fun. Yeah. I gotcha. Well, I've got a mystery for you.
Okay.
And it's a mystery that the Toyota dealership has not been able to solve. I have a 2012 RAV4 V6. It's got about 69,500 miles on it. And about 3 months ago, it started. When I start the car in the morning and put it in reverse, I get a shaking and rattling from the front engine compartment up on the passenger side. And it's gotten pretty significant when I put it in reverse. So I'm taking it into Toyota. They can't seem to find the problem. They can't duplicate the issue, for a particular reason. And the reason is it only happens at the first start in the morning.
Okay.
I'll drive it for maybe 750 feet, like around the corner, park in the 7-Eleven and pick up my Powerball ticket, and it no longer happens in reverse. Once I put it in drive, I should point this out, it only happens in reverse. When I put it in drive, shake rattle goes away immediately. And then this does not repeat at all the rest of the day.
Okay, well, I'm not going to be able to fix it for you, but I have some questions for you. Is your driveway where you park it, is it sloped?
The driveway is slightly sloped, but the garage where I park it is not.
Okay.
And that's when that's where it happens.
I understand. Yeah. I understand. This is question and answer time. I'm going to try to guide you. I can't fix your car. Can Toyota hear the noise when you leave it overnight?
I left it with them last week, so they could duplicate it in the morning. They said that they could not. That the issue did not present itself, and so they could not duplicate it.
Okay.
That just tells me they didn't follow instructions.
I'm not going there with you on that. I'm not going with you. That happens in my world all the time. I ask you an important question to me, not to you, and that's, do you park on a slope? That makes a big difference. There's all kinds of things that happen when the car's parked on a slope, so that's why I ask you that. And I've walked in their shoes, so I'm not gonna jump all over the Toyota dealership and say you can't find it, because we can't fix what we can't find, and we can't find what we can't hear. It's that simple. You have two choices. You wait till it gets worse and easier to find, or you become the person that finds or identifies the origination of the noise, and you do that by parking it with the hood open. The next morning, you teach someone how to start it up. You have a long screwdriver in your hand, and when the noise starts happening, you touch different parts of the engine with your screwdriver, and you'll be able to feel the noise.
Interesting.
And when you're up underneath the hood, you're a lot closer as to, hey, it's coming from this guy right over here. This could be a suspension. I don't know if you have air suspension, but this could be the pump rattling. There's just 100 things this can be, but here's the good news. None of the lights on the dash are red. You don't have any codes.
Right.
So, and we'll be able to answer why when we fix what. That's all there is to it. In their defense, this happens all the time. This is once a week for us. And now, there is, I do remember one time, we had somebody that would come into their driveway, come into their flat garage, kind of hot, because when the technician went over there, he said, there's some skid marks underneath the front tires of this car. And I said, just one set? And he goes, no, many sets, coming in kind of hard, and then parking it. And what was happening in that particular case is there was this flutter associated with this piece of paper that was behind the shroud. And for whatever reason, it would disjoint that piece of paper or whatever. But ultimately what happened was, is we found the piece of paper. And then we just took it out and we said, we don't know. And he said, it's gone. So those are the kinds of things. But if you could be underneath the car, or I mean not underneath the car, underneath the hood, and have somebody just start it, teach them how to start it exactly like you do, then with your hands, and keep away from the fan belts for obvious reasons, but just touch different things. Because if you touch this and you go, it's coming from right here, you know what that is?
Yeah.
That's the air pump that levels your suspension. So you sit all night and you have a small leak, and in the morning when you hit the key, the car starts and that pump comes on. And as soon as it sees that front axle or the back axle or one of the corners is level again, it stops. By the time you're back on the sidewalk, you're driving down the road. So this, if you have an air suspension, that would be something I would do. I would say, touch this in the morning when you start your car. It is this rattling. Okay, well, then we'll go fix the leak. I got you.
And what's really interesting is the noise you just made. Mm-hmm. That sounds exactly like the car does in the morning.
And that's usually an air pump. Now the air pump is typically for an air suspension, and it's typically just because one of the sensors. See, what happens is there's sensors in there, and pretend it's 0, 1, 2, and then it's 0, 1, 2 on the other side. So either side of 0 is two numbers, 1 and 2. So 0 is level. So at 1, hey, I'm about to open up the valve so I can bring this back to level. And so all these electronics are talking to one another. And so in the morning, hypothetically, yours ends up to be a 2. So you've got one airbag that has lost a lot of its charge. So when you turn the key on, and here's something else I want you to try. Just turn the key to the on position, but don't start it. Just turn the key to the on. That will help us too. So what's being fired up? Another thing it can be the fuel pump. You could have it in a leaking injector. It could be leaking down overnight. When you turn the key on, the fuel pump's going to go, oh, the pressure's supposed to be 40 and it's only 21. And then the pump comes on and goes off. Well, throughout the day, you don't let it sit long enough for that injector to be leaking. And so then you don't get the rattle of the fuel pump. Historically, people recognize that the fuel pump is inside the gas tank, but there's a whole lot of people that say that it vibrates the whole car, and it's just their perception
that's really interesting. That's good advice, and I can try that. One other note is if I turn the car on in the morning, push button start, by the way, if I let it sit for 2.5 minutes, 3 minutes, and then put it into reverse, no rattle, no shake. Which is another mystery.
Well,
right? And
we're going to have to hear and feel and what you're feeling. So it has to get worse before it's going to be easier to find. And the explanation on how this all happened will be fine once we fix it. Once we hear it, once we fix it, once we find it. I'm thinking myself, if this is a fuel pump, he turns the key on. From the minute the key goes on, the engine's not even running. The pump's going to chatter. So, but if it's a suspension problem and one of the corners is drooping because the air suspension is drooping, then it's going to have to be running and it's going to rattle, but it's probably not going to pump it up by the time he gets to the end of the driveway. It usually takes a good minute or two to pump up that one corner of the vehicle. So I'm going through all the possibilities, but at the end of the day, what part of town do you live in?
I'm over actually near you. I'm in Chandler near Ray and 56th Street.
Okay. If it happens absolutely every single morning, you call the shop and you tell them, and I've got this noise that only happens first thing in the morning. You turn the key on, it's a noise. I'd like very much to make an appointment, drop it off the night before, you guys park it in the bays, and then the next morning, if you'll put a big sign on the windshield, we're going to do this anyway. Put a sign on the windshield, don't start. And then we get, everybody gets around him except the drunk technician who drank way too late in the morning. And he's going to work on your car anyway. And so we get everybody around it, and somebody gets in. And if you give us the 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, park the car. You don't have to set the emergency brake. Take the key out. Lock it with your remote. Get out. Mm-hmm. Next morning, unlock it with the remote. Get inside. Buckle your seatbelt. Start the car. There's the noise. If you just give us the 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, then we'll follow that exactly. And that if it happens every morning, it should happen to us, and it should be something that we can identify. All righty?
You got it. I can do that. Thanks so much,
okay.
Mark.
You're welcome. 602-508-0960. 602-508-0960. This isn't about my shop. He just happens to be geographically located.
1 minute.
Close by. And that's why. And he opened the door, and I thought I'd say, okay, we can help you. Nevertheless, 602-508-0960. And talking about cars is that it's give and take. It's ask a question and listen to the answer, and ask a question and listen to the answer. And so many, many times we don't get to do that for a variety of reasons. Sometimes the customer doesn't want to do that. Sometimes the customer doesn't know the answers. And it's okay, because the answers is yes, no, or I don't know. Those are acceptable answers when you're talking to your car repair shop. There's a lot of shops out there that would, and then, of course, once we figure out what this is, then everybody will be able to have a laugh. It's not uncommon. I remember one time that somebody had left something plugged into the rear cigarette lighter, and I don't remember exactly what it was, but it created a humming noise on startup. And the back seat was filled with lots of stuff, like dry cleaning and bags of recycle, stuff like that. And so we listened to it. We could hear, but we didn't. And it would only come on for just a few seconds, and then it would go away. And so ultimately, we just took all the trash out of the inside of the car. And here's this thing that's plugged into a cigarette lighter in the back. And when you power it up, then bzz, it goes. Weird. 602-508-0960, and we'll be right back. Welcome back, everybody. 19 minutes after the hour of 10 o'clock. My name is Mark Salem. We're going to get to the calls, but real quick, let me tell you about Phil at Automatic Transmission Exchange. He's the Fred Flintstone of automatic transmissions. He's been around since they first came out. He understands how we shift them from first gear, second gear, third gear, fourth gear, overdrive, and lockup. He knows how to do that. He knows the sensors. He's really good at what goes in and what goes out of your transmission. So if you need a transmission problem repaired, or if you have a noise and you can make it happen, then call Automatic Transmission Exchange. Tell them Mark said that if you stopped by at a prearranged time, that you guys would take a ride. Now, you have to make sure that you can make it happen, because you can't take our technicians for a two-hour ride until it does happen. So learn how to make it happen. Automatic Transmission Exchange, 40th Street in Washington. Let's go to the phones. Lauren, you're up first. How can I help you?
Good morning, Mark. I don't have a question for you, but I just wanted to share something.
Sure.
We're based out of British Columbia, Canada. We listened to your show for the last couple of years, and we have a winter home here in Gilbert, and I bought some fog lamps in Yuma about a week ago, and I thought, geez, I've got to get somebody to put these in. I've been listening to you, and I went to your shop, and first of all, I got to tell you and your listeners, I've been driving cars for 53 years old. I'm 69. Never been in a shop as professional, as clean. I mean, you, house operation. So I talked to Alan, I guess, your son, and he, and I tell you, what a great guy, but I'll share something else with you. But he looked at these lights. He said, well, I'll put them in for you, but first of all, they're not going to do what you want them to do, and they're not street legal. So we got to talking, ended up buying a pair of rigid premium. He'd never done an install, so I told him I want him. I got a 19-inch ST, and I want him down on the lowest part of the grill. I'm an ex-sheriff, retired. We used to put our fog lamps down low on the grill there. Yeah, we can do that. So we made a plan and got the car in. And I didn't realize, these poor guys, that they had to pull the whole front end of my car off in order to mount these things. I thought they'd go in from underneath.
No.
So he sends me a picture, and he says, we can't put them where you want them. There's just no way they're going to fit there. I'd suggest strongly you put them up higher, and he had two circles. And I said, nah. I'm really sorry, but no, that's not what I want. Not realizing how much work he'd already done. No issue. He didn't complain. He said, no problem. Sorry about that. You know, he said, if it was mine, you know, I do this. I'm pretty good at what I do. And this is why I put him. I said, well, thanks, but no thanks. I got to thinking about it, and I look at that shop, and I'm thinking, this guy obviously knows what he's doing. So I said, you know what? Go ahead. Do what you're going to do. You're the expert. I'm going to put my faith in you. I'll tell you. What a great job. They cut my grill precisely, made two holes, mounted these lights, got them in perfect. One little error, and it was just a miscommunication. I said I wanted them done, so when the ignition was on, the light was off, they'd go off, because me, I'd forget one night and dead battery in the morning. I got it, drove it home, test them. They didn't wire it that way. Called them. Oh, geez, really sorry. Bring it back. They end up having to pull the whole front end off that car a second time. No complaints, no nothing. I couldn't believe how good they were. So I just got to share that with you. And Alan, what a great guy. So from now on, when we get our work done down south, it'll be at your place for anything that's not warranty related. Can't give you enough credit for the work he did. And, you know, just really, really good. Good, beautiful shop. So that's all.
Okay. Well, I got a couple questions for you. Okay. I'm a former cop too. How many inches off the ground did you want those white lights to be?
Well, they were amber. They're an amber.
Oh, amber. Okay.
I wanted them just at the lowest part of the grill. The main idea for it was we get snow up north where we're not a lot. We're right on the U.S. border, but. I wanted them so desert driving out on the open highway in the daytime with the daytime running lights. I wanted some ambers so people will see me out on those flat highways.
Fair enough.
These are a completely different type of pattern. So I have to take them back, get them adjusted up, and they're perfect. The way he's got them mounted, you couldn't ask for it. Okay. Work any better.
Because Arizona here, depending on the color of the lights, and in reality, you're only allowed to have to the front of the car a color between white and yellow, white and orange, and yours apply, yours are amber.
Yeah.
And there's also height restrictions, and so he's got that in his office, and so we don't mount them lower out of the range that we're allowed or up above the range. Now, do you use these all the time?
Yes, basically we'll have them on almost like a daytime running light. They're just for basically in the day when we do a lot of highway miles. I just want to be seen out there in oncoming traffic.
All right, let me ask, why didn't we just wire it into the ignition switch so when you turn the key on, the lights come on, and when you turn the key off, the lights go off? Why didn't we just do that?
Well, you could have done that, but I think it's probably better this way. Well, they do. Well, that's what you're supposed to do. That was Alan, but was a miscommunication with your tech.
Okay.
Alan said that he misunderstood. Yeah, that's exactly the way they are now, but they also have a switch, so I can override it so they don't come on.
All right, and so...
It was perfect. I mean...
What we usually do is we grab a hot wire on the front end, like on the daytime running lights or something, and we'll fire up your lights, but we'll take the ground and we'll run it through a switch. So if you don't want the lights on, you flip the switch and we kill the ground and the lights go out. So, thank you for your kind comments. My son is my hero because him and lights and four-wheel drives and fancy this and fancy that. Don't you ever go in and talk to him about other accessories on your car without your wife. Because he'll hand you a list.
No, I left her at home. I left her at home. It was our 50th anniversary last month, and so this was my present. I told him he kind of chuckled about that. But
and
to do with that ground, they had a real hard time on this 19-inch. He says he's never done one, so he took pictures of it all and that. And I said use those to show anybody else that might want to get one done. But they had a bit of a nip. It took them a while to figure out this new stuff and all how these grounds work. But they got it all done.
Yeah.
Perfect, perfect insulation. When you look at them, they're flush. know.
Yeah, we on his side of our business, he has the performance side of our business. So I do the mechanical. He runs both sides, but we have two. We have a performance division, and then we have a mechanical division. He runs both, but his guys on his side are perfectionists. And that's because hold on. I'm up against the time frame here. When he cuts a grill and we have to buy another grill, then his mother gets really mad at him. And so those are the kinds of things that are kind of tough to go. But thank you very much for your kind comments. Ridgid is a light that we use, and it is the Cadillac Mercedes-Benz of exterior lighting. And it's a good white light in my truck. I don't know how many Ridgid lights I've got in my truck, but enough to see backwards, sideways, and frontways real good. But thank you for that. Larry, I can't get to you. Yes, I can. I'm going to try it. Larry, let's start with what's going on.
Hi, Mark. I bought a 2013 Honda Cross Tour about 3 weeks ago from a used car dealership.
Okay.
They had put a new battery in it, and so I drove it probably 300 miles over the next week and a half, and so I took it to the emissions station so I could get it registered, and they said that it's not showing any kind of reading.
Okay.
And so then I took it back to the where I bought it, and he supposedly reset the computer code. I drove it another 150 miles, took it to the emissions yesterday, the same thing, and they said, well, here, let's give you this little plug-in box. I don't know what the name of it, but they put a plug-in box, and they said it's got red, yellow, green, and they plug it in and says, you're on yellow. And he said, so as soon as it turns green, come back and we can at that point get it tested. But my only concern is I've probably driven a total of 450 miles.
Okay. Real quick. In the old days of emissions in the 70s when I was born in the emissions,
1 minute,
we figured out that if we just disconnected the battery, we could erase all the codes and then you could sail through emissions. Well, they're smarter than we are. So you have to have so many warm up and cool downs. You have to have a certain RPM for a certain period of time. You have to have a certain speed for a certain period of time. And the prerequisites for you to clear that code are pretty immense. And so you can't just get in your car and drive from here to Flagstaff and come back. That's not going to do it. We need a couple of heat cycles, a couple of cold starts, a couple of warm starts. We need hard throttles. We need soft throttles. We need all of this kind of stuff. What they gave you is something that we were a part of helping with. The idea is that you're just caught in a bind. It'll never happen again. It happens maybe once a month to us. But in reality, it's a way to keep people from cheating. They would fail emissions, they disconnect their battery, negative cable, and then they sail right through. So we made it where they can't do that anymore. 602-508-0960. If Larry, if you have another question, stay right there. We'll be right back. Welcome back, everybody. 34 minutes after the hour of 10 o'clock. I want to make a couple of comments real quick here. There was a gentleman that called in, and he had come to our shop, and he talked about that they couldn't mount the lights here, and then there were some other issues and stuff like that. You have to know I'm a tyrant, and you have to know that I know right from wrong, and I was proud to hear him say that we didn't charge him for this, or we didn't charge him for that, or we tried this, and we didn't charge him for that. We don't do lots of no charging, but when we go in the wrong direction or when it's our fault, we don't charge the customer for that, and there's a whole lot of shops out there that don't do that either. So I am, you can imagine, because I'm on the radio on a regular basis, that my shop is held to a higher standard, and that's okay with us. But we know right from wrong, and so if when I hear that we did something for free, then I know we did something wrong. And my daughter and my son will take care of that. Anyway, let's get to the phones. Mo, you're up first. How can I help you? Mo?
He should be there.
Hello, Mo. Okay.
Okay, we'll get back to him. I'll see where he is.
Yeah, and the lines are open, 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. And if you'd like to call us and you have a car question or a comment or something like that, you can pass that on to us as well, 602-508-0960. Oftentimes we have callers from outside the Phoenix metropolitan area, 888-960-9696. 888-960. We are 960 The Patriot. And then 9696, that's a toll-free outside Phoenix number, and you can use that. Of course, today I don't think there's a lot of tolls on your cell phone works anywhere at any time, but nevertheless, 602-508-0960 is where we're talking about. When it comes to lighting, the new white and bright lighting, the LED lighting, and all the other fancy lighting, there's a real art to placing those. We can't have them too high, we can't have them too low, but we have to do what the customer wants us to do. One of the real popular things is these little light bars that you can mount on the front of a vehicle, off-road vehicle, stuff like that, that give you 180 degrees of white light, except the window on the light is kind of narrow from top to bottom. So you touch the ground with the bottom of the light, and then the top part of the light gives you another 100 feet or maybe even 200 feet of light. Sometimes those lights have a real big window, so when you touch the ground with the light beam, the other part of the beam is shooting straight up in the sky. And that creates a problem with vision from inside the vehicle. If you drop the light down and you throw the top part of the light way out there, the majority of the lights in light is lighting up in front of you. So there's a variety of lights, and you have to work with all of those, and you have to make sure you meet the customer's expectation. Another thing I'm surprised at, but it's no big deal, is the gentleman said he took his lights in, took the lights in, and I think they ended up switching them to rigid. I think that's what he said. But there's some lights that we won't install because we know that their brackets aren't good. We know that the wiring is substandard. We know that they'll contain water when it's raining. And so we know that they'll come back and back. And because we didn't sell the lights to the customer, although we were the last ones to touch the lights, then obviously the customer may think that we are responsible for the maintenance and the warranty on the lights that we didn't sell. So those are the kinds of ifs, ands, and buts that we deal with on a regular basis. Who might that be, Gil?
Say good morning to Stuart.
Stuart, good morning.
Hi. Do you say your name was Bill? Is that right?
Mark. I'm Mark.
Mark, I've got a 03 Grand Marquis. Brought it over to a friend to fix power steering because it only had 9 volts going to the regulator on the power steering rack. And then he calls me up and says it won't start. Any way of knowing, do we think it's an ECM problem, or why it won't start?
I want to tell you something. If he doesn't have the skills necessary to do the job, he shouldn't have raised his hand. Because this kind, you're in a mess, and I'm going to change the way you talk. Otherwise, you're not going to get anybody to work on this. You're just not.
True.
You know, you take it to a shop and say, I've taken it to 3 different shops and it's on a tow truck now and I want you to fix it. We don't want no part of that dog.
Well, it's on my car trailer.
I understand. Yeah. I'm just kind of warning you. A friend of mine called the other day and he said, we went to high school together, and he says, hey, I need you to put a PCM in my car. And I said, I'm not doing that. He goes, I thought we were friends. I said, that's why I'm doing it. We are friends. I'm not doing that. You see, the ECM, this is what happens. You go down to the auto parts store, and the three-whiskered kid tells you that, according to the code, you need a new ECM. So then you go hire somebody to buy an ECM, and we have to program it for your car, and after we put it in, you still have the same problem. Now whose butt is on the chopping block? You haven't paid us, and we won't even come close to that. We just won't do those. We had one the other day. The guy takes his truck in, and he's told it needs a PCM.
So he takes it to some other shop, and they put a PCM in it. You know the answer to the rest of this story. The code came back. The problem came back.
Yeah.
So then it went danced around all kinds of shops, and finally someone I know, Rick, called me and said, have you heard about this car? I said, yes, I have. He says, why don't you have it? And I says, I'm not taking it. I just don't do those chain cars that go from service shop to service shop. Everybody does something different, and I got to go back up the line. And no. He says, well, I'm going to take it. And he says, and I'm pretty sure I know what it is. And I said, tell me. And he goes, when the computer is looking at this particular parameter, it expects to see 1 through 5 volts. He says, the sensor is telling it 4, but the computer's not seeing that. And I said, I said, is that code related to that? And he goes, yeah. He says, I'm interfacing between the sensor talking to the computer, the ECM, electronic control module. I'm interfacing that. And he says, the signal's going to it, but it's not seeing it. And I said, well, I said, so what are you going to do? He says, well, it needs an ECM. The problem with it is that everybody out there has been putting ECMs in it. And I said, well, how do we know that they programmed?
It's got to be flashed.
Yes, we have to program it to the car, and you better make sure you got the right car. And so you have to have the equipment to tell the computer, this is the VIN and this is the car. So all this kind of stuff, and at the end of the day, the problem was a bad connection off the throttle position sensor going to the ECM. It was never an ECM. The ECM was seeing a substandard number, but it was because of a bad connection. It wasn't because the ECM wasn't alive. So if you would have checked, if you would have pin tested it at the TPS, throttle position sensor, and then you go over to the ECM and it happens to be the yellow number 64 wire, and you find, wait a minute, there's a difference. Now you take a jumper and you go from the TPS all the way to the ECM, boom, we're back alive. Then you go, okay, well, I better figure out where this connection is bad. So you bring up a good point, and I'm going to finish with this. We won't do any of that as the customer requests. If you want to bring it in, we did one the other day, and in fact, the problem was that the computer had an input, but the output was bad. So the ECM was truly bad. So we reprogrammed, plugged it in, put it back together, everything is fixed, but we knew that the right signal was coming in, but it wasn't coming out. And so that's the PCM's job, is to interpret that. And you bring up a good point, because I want to tell you, there's lots of people out there that are shaking their heads, and there's a lot of wives looking at their husbands right now going, remember when you did that? And the idea is, it's simple. Whoever fixes it has to fix it. And so nothing changes. He can't pass the buck, and he can't say, well, that was a dealer ECM. It's probably defective. Take it back to the dealer. They can't do that. That's not right. It's not correct. It's not honorable. It's not anything. So anyway, Stuart, good luck to you. Good luck to you. Do you feel pretty comfortable where you're at now?
Well, I agree with what you're saying. There's another cause, and the man didn't identify it.
Right. So what are you going to do now?
I wanted to find out what your shop is for a future event. I might want to bring my 39 Pontiac.
Your 39 what?
Pontiac. I have a number of cars. Got 11
All right.
cars.
Okay. All right. Well, what part of town do you live in?
I'm at 16th Street and Baseline. But like I said, the Grand Marquis is on my car trailer.
Okay. Well, there's 25th Street Auto. Martin's Auto is just north of you, up near Indian School and Thomas. So if you look up Martin's Auto, Dave Martin, he's a killer on stuff like that, the old stuff and the new stuff. And 25th Street Auto, Billy's a killer. He's an old drag racer. Either one of those guys can help you. I'm not chasing you away, but I'm a lot further away than those guys are. So Martin's Auto on 16th Street, and Billy is the car repair shop, I think. If you have problems, email me at mark@marksalem.com, mark@marksalem.com, or you can just go to marksalem.com, click on the best car repair shops. 25th Street Auto, that's the name of it. Billy's is at 25th Street Auto. I think it's 25th Street and Indian School, something like that. I got to run. We'll be back right after this. Welcome back, everybody. One of the things I want to reiterate is this isn't about my shop. This is about car repair.
And when I refer you to people, I'm referring to you to people that I really know, and they're really good. So when I just got done talking with Stuart, I sent him to Billy at 25th Street Auto or Dave Martin at Martin's Auto. Both of those young men, and I call them young men because they're younger than I am. I'm old enough to be their dad. Both of those guys, this is a no problem. They're skilled. They understand fundamentals. They know right from wrong. And either one of those guys can handle this kind of Grand Marquis problem, especially when it comes to an ECM label. We've all been there. We've all done that. When you create a signal to the computer and you say that the engine temperature is 240 degrees, the computer's 250. The computer typically is going to turn on the electric cooling fan. So input, output, input, output. And it's all about that. What the computer sees, it looks at the book and it says, when I see 9, I better do this. And when I see 7, I better do this. That's what it's all about. So you have to test the computer to see if you give it a signal, does it respond appropriately? So many times the computer is not the problem, and there's a lot of you that are raising your hand right now and saying, I know that, because somebody put an ECM in and that didn't fix it. And ultimately it was a bad connection or it was some other problem in the car. It's not unusual. Mo, I know you came back and I'm ready to help you. How can I help you today?
Good morning, Mark. I hope you can hear me this time. Can you?
I can.
Oh, great, great. Okay, I've got a 01 Dodge Ram 4x4, 5.9 gas engine. A year ago from a used car lot, and when I was checking it out, it looked like it was leaking a little tranny fluid. I thought it was the front seal, and they said, yeah, that's all it is. So they put a new seal on, and then it was fine. Didn't leak any. Transmission ran great. Okay, about 3 days ago, I'm coming back from the bank. I pull in my driveway. I go to the cover parking. Right before I stop, the yellow light goes on with the symbol of the transmission.
Okay.
It's like it's in neutral, right? Even though I'm in drive, it's in neutral. And so, you know, I just had to press down a little harder on the gas, and then 10 feet or 5 feet later, I was in my parking spot. Okay? So I checked the
Wait a minute. We got to get to the end of this, Mo. We got to get to the end of this. I mean, just kind of skip to the end. You got a transmission leak. Now it sounds like you got a fluid problem, but let's continue on. But
okay, well, I checked the transmission. In part, right? The fluid level is fine. But the yellow transmission symbol, you know, of the transmission,
yes,
came on, and I was just wondering what you think that could be.
Well, it's going to cost you somewhere between $75 and $125 to have somebody that knows what the data stream looks like. So if you plug in a scanner and it says 4.6, and then it says do this, and it's 2.1, you're not going to know the difference between those two numbers, and you're not going to know what they mean. You're not going to know nothing. So the real question is someone's going to plug in a handheld scanner that can cost, on the short side, $3,000, on the top end, $20. And the scanner isn't going to tell him how to fix your car. We're going to interpret numbers. The entire car, your truck, everybody in the world with a car or motor vehicle, it's all numbers. So if we look at the throttle position sensor and we know it's idling and the throttle position sensor's reporting 4.1, the throttle position sensor is lying. So you have to know all of that. So you're going to have to take it someplace, and you're going to have to say, I got a transmission signal there. How much do you charge me to just look at it and come to some kind of a diagnostic process? And most of us are going to say $50. We're going to look at the code. We're going to plug in our scanner, and we're going to see, what's the possibility of you fixing this by just looking at it? Zero. We're not going to fix it by looking at it.
I'm going to have to tow it to a transmission shop and have them check it out. Can you recommend a good transmission shop, like in Sunny Slope near Cave Creek Road and Dunlap in that area? Whoa. Cave Creek Road in Peoria?
Well, you didn't ask for my advice, but I'm unclear as to why you need a transmission shop.
Oh, no. Go ahead.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Just go to marksalem.com and find a shop in your geographical area. I think Harker's up there is 38th Avenue and Indian School. I think he'd be a good guy. Bob, who runs Harker's Automotive, is an old-time drag racer like I am, and I know that he is as sharp can be, and I know he's not going to have any problem. You call him and say to him, I've got a transmission problem. I've got a transmission code. Is it something you want to see? He may farm it to a transmission shop that he likes. And you do want to go on a referral from a shop, and you don't want to go from a referral on TV. Because there's some of the
change. Okay, it's called Harkers. Is that H-A-R-K-E-R-S?
Yes, Harkers. Yeah, talk to Bob.
It's 38th Avenue. 38th Avenue in Indian Street.
Yeah. Give me other major cross streets where you're at.
Like 7th Street and Dunlap.
Okay. Well, you can come south and get 25th Street Auto and Dave Martin's, too. Both of those guys are worth talking to. So, and those guys are listed on our website. And so I just don't have anybody in the Sunny Slope area. I'm pretty particular about who I refer to or which shops I refer to. And I just don't have anybody in the specific Sunny Slope area. Does the truck move right now?
Well, I don't know. It's been like 3 or 4 days, you know. It was like in neutral, and then I had to put a little extra gas, on the throttle just to move it into the parking spot.
Okay. Did you check the fluid? Is it below the ad mark significantly?
No, it's fine. I checked it in park. You know, the engine runs good. So I kept the engine running. Okay, I put it in park, pulled the transmission stick out, stuck it back in. It was in park. Fluid level is fine.
Okay, but you're describing a low fluid level symptom. That's the reason I'm asking you. So when you look at the dipstick, it'll give you directions, and it'll say warm or cold or give you a warm mark or a hot mark. It may. There's lots of cars out there. So you're describing a low fluid problem, but you're saying that the transmission, according to the dipstick, it's full. If that's the case, and it could be the case, you've got an internal leak somewhere that the transmission's creating the pressure, but it's got an internal leak and it's leaking. And that's the reason why it won't move until you rev your car up. And then after a while, it starts moving and chattering and stuff like that. And that's really hard on the clutches, so I probably wouldn't do that. You may end up towing this. It's up to you. Those are the decisions that you have to make.
Okay, Mark, what's the name of the place? 25th Street Auto, is that on...
25th Street Auto.
Indian School and something?
Yeah, Indian School and like 24th Street, 25th Street, a block off that. It's on.
Okay,
just go to MarkSalem.com, click on Best Car Repair Shops, go click Phoenix, and 25th Street Auto's there, Martin's Auto's there, and Harker's Auto's there. All three of them are close to you.
All right, buddy. Thanks.
Okay,
have a great day.
Good luck. Good luck. Fixing cars isn't easy, but it in reality... Maybe once a month we get a car that confounds us, and all of us within the industry have people that we can lean on. For instance, there was a time where a shop that's a good friend of mine calls me and says, can we get a fresh pair of eyes? Through the grace of God, one of our guys has seen this problem before and went directly to the problem where two vacuum lines had been switched. That's all. Just switched. And so he fixed that. It's the same way with me. There are times where I'll call and lean on some of the shops around and say, you know what, we're just blind. We've done everything imaginable. And when you have a problem with your car, the first question is it spark or fuel? And if you have a check engine light, you have to verify that the check engine light is a valid check engine light, and you clear it. Then you go drive it and wait till it comes back on, and then you look at the serial stream data. Otherwise, you're looking at the history data. So you're driving down the road, and all of a sudden, the check engine light comes on. Well, it says that it's running really fat, really rich. There's too much fuel being delivered. So you start looking at this, and you find that the fuel pressure regulator is leaking gasoline like a sieve. And so then you pull the vacuum line off, and it's full of gas, and you go, bingo, I know what I'm doing now. So the code doesn't tell us to go to this address and fix this problem. The code tells us that the computer thinks the problem lies here. But the code doesn't tell us exactly what the repair is. Folks, I got to tell you, there isn't a day go by in a weeks of my life that we don't have a car come in and it's got a check engine light on it, and sometimes it comes in on a tow truck. And we open up the hood and just about every sensor in underneath the hood has been replaced. Now, some of them is plug and play. You disconnect it. You unbolt it, you put the new one on, you reconnect the wire harness, and that's a done deal. Some of them. Some of them you have to calibrate. Some of them, like the throttle position sensor, oftentimes they want, when the throttle is at this RPM, they want that number to be 0.82.
So you have to match that. You have to go to the RPM first and then set the sender to talk the 2.82. So that's how it, you just can't plug in a throttle position sensor. Sometimes you can, but most of the times you can't. You can't just plug it in and it's going to play. You have to set it to the computer's parameters first. That's the hard part. But oil changes and all that other kind of stuff are a little bit easier, but it's difficult. And what makes it hard for you, the customer, is that there's a whole lot of oil change shops that have decided that they want to get into the car repair business. And so water pumps is different, radiators is different, front end work is different, but when it comes to under the hood and the electronics and the ECM, never, ever, ever let a shop replace your ECM, your electronic control module, the main computer on your car, until you get it in writing that if this doesn't fix it, that you don't have to pay for it. And people do that to us, and we're happy to sign that document. We're happy to sign that. But I'll be honest with you, once a year it bites us. Once a year we make a big refund to the customer because we missed it, because we missed it. That's all there is to it. We just missed it. And so does other people miss theirs as well. So the idea is that we don't want to guess with your money, and that's what you do. You say to the shop, okay, you're telling me it's going to be like $300 to diagnose this, and so I don't want you guessing with my money. So call me with your diagnosis, and then I'm going to say the same thing. You say it needs a new mass airflow sensor, so you're going to put a mass airflow sensor on it. I'm going to pay your diagnostics. I'm going to pay for the mass airflow sensor and the labor to install it, and that light's not going to come back on again. Is that right? Yes. Good. That's the agreement you should have. 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. If you'd like to join us, the lines are wide open. There's five of them, 602-508-0960. And my name is Mark Salem, and every Saturday here on KKNT in Phoenix, 960 The Patriot, I'm here talking about cars for 2 hours, and we're getting ready to come up on the second hour right about now. Well, welcome back to hour number two from 11 to 12. We're talking about car repair questions, and this is what I was told. Would you like to comment on that, Mark? Or this is what they did, and this is the new symptom I have. Those are the kinds of discussions we'll have. 602-508-0960. The lines are wide open. There's five. 602-508-0960. What kind of oil do you put in your car, Mark? What kind of gasoline do you put in your car, Mark? What kind of belts and hoses do you sell? Those kinds of things we can discuss. Those kinds of things I have answers for. Those kinds of things I can guide you. 602-508-0960. There's two shops in town. One's on the west side and one's on the east side. The one on the west side is Auto Dynamics. He's been around. Chuck is the owner. He's been around since 1982. He's on the north side of Grand, just west of 99th Avenue in Sun City. West side of Grand, just north and west of 99th Avenue. He's been around a long time. Chuck knows the difference between right and wrong. He started back in the gas station business in the 60s and 70s like I did. And he knows what a technician is telling him. He knows whether it's the truth or not. And through the grace of God, we're well educated in that sense. So if you don't have a shop in Sun City, then may I suggest Automotive Dynamics, Grand Avenue, just west of 99th Avenue. The other side of the road, the other side of the valley is Thompson's Auto Repair and Towing. Brian and Thelma come from two families that have been running gas stations in the Mesa area since the 60s. These two young people, and Brian and Thelma are married, they come from two different families, a Shell gas station side and a Union 76 side. They came up at the dinner table with the slight odor of gasoline because Dad was home from the gas station. They know right from wrong. They're really good people. And they're on Main Street just east of Stapley, and unfortunately, I would love to give you two or three different garages in Mesa, but I have a pretty fine filter. But Thompson always has and always will be on my list. Thompson's Auto Repair, Main Street just east of Stapley. The reason why we're talking a lot about ECMs, electronic control modules, or the computer in your car is because over the last maybe month, my world has been dominated by that. Here's the mistake people make. They have someone diagnose the ECM, and you take it to shop A, and A says, and you say, I have a code, I have a check engine light, and they call you and say, you need a new computer. At that point, you take it to another shop and have them put the computer in. That is the recipe for disaster. You can't do that. That happened twice last week, and I was asked to be involved in both of them.
The fact of the matter is whoever diagnoses it has to fix it. If they charge you a diagnostic fee, then they better know what they're doing, and they better put in the part, and it better turn off your check engine light. In this particular case, he took it to a third shop, and he instructed them to replace the computer. Well, that was $600. At the end of the day, the same code came back. So the computer is the transportation network for all the electronics, but it's also a place where those codes are stored. The problem is the computer is just telling you what it's being told. So the very first shop said, well, they probably did something wrong. The second shop said, well, you didn't tell us to fix anything. You instructed us to replace the ECM, instructed us to replace the computer, and we did. And the fact that we did it right means that there are no additional codes. Now you're telling us there's a code in there, but that code is still there, but none of the other codes, the installation codes, are there. So, you know, I can track it backwards, but right now. So if someone tells you they need a computer to turn off the check engine light, you need to you either hire them or you get a second diagnosis and then find somebody who will do both, diagnose and repair. The process is very arduous and very difficult. It's not for an oil change quick loop facility. It's not for a company that sells lots of tires. It's not for somebody who works in a chain store and he was graduated from high school 3 years ago. That's not where you need to be. It's a sophisticated process to remove the computer from your car, buy a new bare one, and then plug that in to a database and tell that computer you are going to be responsible for Mark Salem's 2012 Dodge pickup truck, and here's the VIN number. That's what they're going to talk about. So once we load the software in the computer, then it's really plug and play. Plug it in. If the diagnosis was right, the check engine light will not come back, and we're done. The problem is internal to the computer. Here's the biggest problem. The same code comes back. So you had a 39. The shop said the 39 indicates that the computer needs to be replaced, so we need to replace it, and that's going to cost you $650. Go ahead. $650 later, we still have code 69. It's the way it is. You can't have that, so you can't split up the difference between who diagnosed it and who repaired it. Who diagnoses it has to fix it. And you always pay with a credit card, because if you pay with a credit card and then they give you back the car and it has the same exact problem as you had before, you write a nice letter to your insurer or your credit card company and say, I don't want to pay this charge because this is what happened. I had a code. They said they fixed the code. They gave me a bill, and here's a copy of the bill. I still have the code. Here's documentation. And they didn't fix the code, and they replaced the computer. So their diagnosis was wrong, their repair was wrong, and I don't want to pay for it. And 9 times out of 10, the insurance or your credit card company will backcharge the shop, because like, really and truly, who's big enough in Phoenix to tell MasterCharge or Visa or Discover or American Express to go pound sand? None of us are. No one's going to tell your credit card company that you better reverse this charge or I'm not going to use your cards anymore. Well, there's half your business goes away, because half of our business pays with a credit card. So we're not that strong to do that. Those are the kinds of things. And I've had just a slew of ECM complaints, and I don't get involved in each and every one of them, but I do what they ask me, and that's give them advice. And typically I advise them to go to somebody's shop that I know is capable of handling this. And I'm really proud to tell you that that list is on my website, marksalem.com. But these guys are good. And the last two PCMs over the last 3 months, PCM issues that I've sent to other shops, both fixed. And the customer called me back and I asked, please wait 2 or 3 weeks and then call me and tell me thumbs up or thumbs down. And I know in my heart that, if you put a new computer in, the code's going to come back pretty quick. We're talking days, maybe even hours. So if it's the same code and it had a 39 and you diagnosed it as a bad computer and then you put it in and then 2 hours later the 39 pops back up, you missed it. And at that particular point, you as the consumer have the right to unwind the deal and start all over again with a credit of $400 or whatever they charged you for the diagnosis, the computer, flash the computer, put your software in it, and complete the deal. That's the credit you're looking for. 602-508-0960. Another thing that's going on in our industry right now is that there is a minority of shops out there that are struggling for business, and they have decided to rewrite your owner's manual. I am hearing on a regular basis, sometimes three and four times a week, of someone who says that my shop says that this was one that happened yesterday. My shop says that I have to replace all the fluids in my vehicle every year. Nothing, and of course this car is less than 10 years old. Nothing can be further from the truth. Almost all the newer model cars, and certainly for the last 5 to 10 years, are calling for somewhere in the vicinity of 75 to 100,000 mile service intervals for the liquids in your car. The cooling system, the power steering, the brake fluid, the transmission fluid, the differential fluid, the transfer case fluid. Most all of those. Now, it is true that you'll get a lot of gray-haired guys that say, I change all that at 50,000 miles. It's okay that they do that. It's not necessary, but it's okay. If it makes you feel better, and if it makes you love your truck better, and if you think your truck's going to love you better and last forever, then knock yourself out. Change all those fluids as much as you want. But by the time you do cooling system, brake fluid, transmission, and differential, and transfer case, by the time you do 5 or 6 fluids, you are clearly past the $1,000 mark. It'll cost you $1,000 to do all of those fluids properly. Doing them at 30,000 miles, or you're being told on a car that's 7 years old to do them at 30,000 miles, is just buttering his bread. All you're doing is if you sign on to that and you don't look in your owner's manual to see what the owner manual actually says, then all you're doing is you're giving him a whole bunch of money every 30,000 miles, and it's not that you need to do that. See, in most of the cars that have been made in the last 10 years, we have synthetic fluids in most of them, and we have also equipment to test the fluids. For instance, brake fluid. We have this little device that costs like $100. And it tells us the moisture content in your brake fluid, how much water you have in your brake fluid. And we don't want a lot of water. It's in a 0.0, 0.1, 0.2 kind of range. So we also have some paper, litmus paper things that we stick in your brake fluid, and we pull it out, and it tells us how much moisture you have in your brake fluid. The fact of the matter is you turn it around and say, Mark, when do you do your fluids? And I say, somewhere between 90 and 100,000 miles on everything I own. Now, between the shop and the kids and the grandkids and Renee's mom and all the family that I'm responsible for, we're doing fluids on at least one or two cars every year. One or two cars every month, but I've got everybody in my family on 100,000-mile services. So you can do whatever you want, but I promise you this much. If you change your transmission fluid every 10,000 miles... If that transmission was going to fail at 70, you could change the fluid every day, but at 70,000 miles, that transmission is going to throw in the towel, and you've wasted a lot of money. There's no such thing as the transmission's going to love you if you change the fluid more often. The transmission is going to last longer. The brakes are going to last longer. The transfer case is going to last longer. The cooling system is going to last longer if you change the fluid on a regular basis. That's just not true. It's just not true. So look in your owner's manual. Dog-ear the pages that shows when you're supposed to change spark plugs and when you're supposed to change the oil and when you're supposed to change all those other fluids. Just dog-ear the pages and live by that, because the owner's manual is written by the guy who built your car. He knows, and he doesn't know if you live in Maine or Arizona, or if you live in a humid, like Florida during the humidity time and Arizona when it's hot, or when it's blazing cold or cold as hell in Montana in the northern part of the United States versus El Paso and Phoenix. So that manual's written for all of those places. And so don't let anybody tell you, oh, well, that manual's not written for Arizona. This is what you say. You say, oh, I didn't know that. Would you order me an Arizona manual for my car? And they'll say, yeah, sure. And then you just put it on your calendar to call them every day and say, did you get that manual? Did you get that manual? Because there is no Arizona model manual for your car or your truck. There is no Arizona manual. So those are the tricks, and part of this problem is this. Years ago, we got to see every 3,000 miles. At 3,000 miles, we changed your oil. And some guys rotated your tires every oil change, but most of us waited till 6,000 or 9,000 miles. So we do a tire rotation every third oil change, is what I mean to tell you. So as the car got newer and the fluids got better, then all of a sudden we morphed into this 50 to 60 and then 60 to 70 and then we're 75 to 100 now. So there's a whole lot of you out there with five-year-old cars that are calling for fluids at 75 to 100,000 miles, and you may have already done them all by now because you've been told that's what needs to be done. But the manual is written for your car, and it's written by the people that built your car and designed your car, and I suspect that they know more about what your car needs than the shop down the street. So 602-508-0960 if you have a car question or a car problem or a comment. Now is the time, 602-508-0960. I'll tell you about two other shops in town that I recommend on a regular basis. Blackwell Automotive is at 40th and Greenway. Tom and Mark Salem are twin brothers of different mothers. We're both pretty principled, both of us have big mouths, and both of us know right from wrong, and both of us are very good at twisting wrenches. So Blackwell, 40th Street, and Greenway, all of us today are backed up. It's not likely that you're going to get an appointment today or tomorrow. You're going to have to make an appointment to bring your car in. That's just the way it is right now in our industry. I don't know why, and I don't have enough time on my hard drive to tell you why. I just don't know. I just know that my shop and lots of other shops are booked days and sometimes weeks in advance. So Blackwell Automotive, 40th and Greenway. Now, if you're on the other side of town, Kurtz is up at I-17 and Bell Road. I've known Kurtz for a very long time. He's honest. Honest as the day is long, as of all the shop owners I tell you about. But he's been around the block. He knows gas and diesel. He has ASE-certified technicians. He's at I-17 and Bell, northeast corner. And years and years and years ago, Kurt told a lady she did not need an engine and fixed her car for $30. And from that point on, he's waved his magic wand numerous times and saved people lots of money. So Kurt's Automotive is a good guy. Let's go to the phones. Craig, good morning. How can I help you?
Morning. I've got a 2001 Mercedes. I bought it from a family friend for my daughter. And it's got an issue. They replaced a key, and so I've got three keys for it now. But sometimes you put that, you know, that electronic key in and turn the ignition, you get nothing.
Okay.
Do it a couple of times, and you pull it out, put it in, and then it finally starts. On, like, sometimes the second, third, or fifth time you do that. And I guess, you know, I only spent about $1,700. It's an old car for my 16-year-old daughter, and I'm just kind of debating how I can do that. Get something that'll be a little bit more consistent so that she's not freaking out when she gets someplace that it's going to start.
Well, you start with who sold you the key that's on and off, good and bad. You start there and explain to them that this is an intermittent key and you're worried that your daughter might need to hop in the car, lock the door, and start and drive away from a hazard and not have the ability to do that. So you're going to start with who sold you the key. This happens all the time. This happens all the time. There's all kinds of people out there that swear that they can take and recode keys and stuff like that. My shop has one guy that will do it. And as a matter of fact, my wife the other day on her Jeep, on her new Jeep she bought, she wanted a new key. And he said, it's too new. You need to go back to the dealer. So we went to Earnhardt, and they made us another key. The keys are usually $200, somewhere around there. They can be as high as $300, and they can be as low as $125. But you need to go to the person who sold you the key first and ask him nicely if he'd redo the key or do another key. If not, then call a local repair shop you deal with and ask them who they use. And now some of the guys that are mobile won't go to a customer's house. They want the shop in between them and the customer. That's possible. The default is clearly go to the dealer. Now, what do you live anywhere near North Scottsdale?
I'm technically over in Phoenix, where I work, and I live out in Gilbert. But
okay. There's a Mercedes dealer in Scottsdale, Goodies, G-O-O-D-Y-S, Goodies. I would call him and ask him, say, Mark Salem said to ask you, do you have somebody who's a mobile technician who makes a good Mercedes key? That's how I would approach that. Call Goodies because he'll know.
Okay.
All right. Good luck to you, Craig. Good luck to you. Dave, you're up next. How can I help you?
Thank you, Mark, for taking my call. Say, I've got a 2014 high performanceness on four-wheel drive. It's got a complicated automatic transmission, and occasionally I track it. Because of the complexity of the car and the fact that it does go on the track occasionally, well over 500 horsepower, I do change my fluids more frequently than is recommended by the owner's manual. And here's my issue. You take it to the Nissan dealer. They have certified mechanics to do that. They're at $250 an hour. So a three-hour service charge handle the transmission would be $750. My question to you, I think I can do better with just as good a people. Who would you recommend going to for a high-performance car of that nature?
Well, I disagree with a lot of what you say. So
okay.
You're out there on the track, and so the real question is, do you drive any different than Mark does in his Dodge that's high performance at about 600 horse or his Corvette that's got 900 horse? The fact of the matter is why are you running your car any different than Grandma Moses runs her car, other than the fact that maybe your temperatures will be a slightly higher, coolant temperature, oil temperature, gear temperature, engine temperature. They'll be slightly higher when you're out there, you know, doing your Rapid Roy the race car boy stuff. The idea is I don't agree, because most of the fluids in most of the cars today are synthetics. The old oils used to turn to a solid between 250 and 300 degrees. Synthetics don't even turn to a solid till north of 500 degrees, and at 500 degrees, your cooling system's trash, your power steering is trash, your engine's trash, your transmission's trash. So I don't agree that the idea that you're going to take it and track it and now you want to speed up the oil change intervals and stuff is a necessary evil. But then again, if that's what you wanted to do, don't buy synthetic oil, because you're wasting it. Because synthetic oil is good for 10 to 15 to 20,000 miles. So if you're going to do a conventional, just go back to a conventional. Go to a 10-30 conventional or 20-50 conventional or whatever. But I missed, you said you had a 14 what? I missed the mic and model.
It's a Nissan GTR.
Okay. Okay. It's really. Go ahead.
In the manual, I don't mean to interrupt you. In the manual, there are a number of pages that fully discuss temperatures, and among the temperatures discussed were the temperatures in the transmission, an array of gauges that you know that come up that can show the driver. Plus, there's a memory, and. Anything above, I'm trying to remember, but anything above 300, and they recommend an immediate change of the fluid.
Yeah, well, that's a 14 car with a 14 manual. That's 9 years ago.
Well, it's an automatic. It's an automatic. It's an automatic.
I know. It's up to you. I wouldn't do that. I just wouldn't do that. I mean, I don't do it to my cars. I don't do it to any of my cars. And you can also, oil is forward compatible. So if you're using a conventional oil right now, there's nothing wrong with you going to a synthetic transmission fluid. There's nothing wrong with it. You can do that. Mm-hmm. So everything is forward compatible. But, 200 degrees is nothing for a conventional oil. 300 degrees is going to be on the ragged edge of a conventional oil, but 500 degrees for a synthetic oil and north of 500 is just common ground. There's no problem there. So
okay.
that's now I'll tell you what, when you pull the dipstick out after you go out and you know race the car, I would be interested if you wiped it on a tissue and you smelled it. And if you did that before you went racing and after you went racing, I'd be interested if there was an odor change. And I'll bet you there isn't. And if there isn't and there's no color change, then there is no problem. No odor, no color, no problem.
Well, that makes sense. Well, okay, that's fine. But let's assume that there's a malfunction of some sort in the differential or in the trans or anywhere
okay.
in that car.
Okay.
Would you take it to, other than a dealer, where you pay $250 an hour for a certified mechanic?
Okay. Well, I can tell you the certified mechanics at the dealership, no matter what what car brand they have would never work for me, because the guys that work for me know Chevys and Ford. They know the alphabet of cars. When you work on Nissans all your life, all you do is work on Nissans. And when you work on Chevrolets or Fords or Hondas or Toyotas or Eclipses or whatever, the guys that are really well-rounded are the guys in the independent market that know all the cars. They know the idiosyncrasies. And if somebody in the shop doesn't know, somebody else in the shop does know. So I think the independent market has much better technicians because they're more rounded. That Nissan guy is not going to come at my place and going to get master technician level hourly rate because he's only done Nissan. So if you give him a Ford, he may not know which end to open the door. And I'm making fun of the situation, but you understand what I'm saying. I want to tell you, $250 an hour on the top end, I keep track of labor rates both in the independent market, the chain market, and the dealer market. All three of them. And we'll be back in a minute. Welcome back to everybody. 34 minutes after the hour, 11 o'clock. If you'd like to join, or if you have a comment or a question or a problem, 602-508-0960. 602-508-0960. We were talking about labor rates when we... And I missed my break, so I had to abruptly say goodbye to you for a minute. And let me tell you about labor rates. I am the labor rate, hourly rate Nazi. I am constantly having our staff and other people, I hire people to go out and do labor rate analysis for me. So I want to price my shop in the middle. I want to be at the 60 to 70% rate of the market. Now we have dealerships, we have independent stores, we have chain stores, we have mom and dad stores, we have small shops, we have all of that kind of stuff. And I'm going to tell you right now, you can always call the shop and ask them what our labor rate is. It's $175 an hour. It's for the performance side, the four-wheel drive side, the mom and dad side, the motorhome side, all that stuff. I don't know about the motorhomes. I may have misspoken there. I think that might be higher, but all the passenger cars and trucks on the road today is $175 at our shop. $250 at a dealership is something that I wonder about. And maybe it's a car that's a special car, and maybe there's so few of them out there that the customers that own the car doesn't have a lot of shops that are going to raise their hand and say, I want to work on your car. I don't know what the situation is, but today the average labor rate in dealerships, independents, chain stores, and mom and pops is about $175, and that's where we're at. And that's the reason I do these analysis all the time. And I actually hire people to call around and get their labor rate. And then we do all the number crunching. And the labor rate, is that for oil changes as well as an engine replacement? Or is there a two-tier labor rate? The oil change, oil change is only $85 an hour. What about an engine pull? Well, that goes to $250. Okay. There's some out there that do that. It's okay with me, but I want to price myself in the middle of that market, and I want to be in the 60% of the range. So that's why we've picked 175, is that's 60% of the range. So when it comes to labor rates, that's kind of how it works. But $250 an hour, but it's not going to take 3 hours, $750 for someone to change your transmission fluid. If they're charging you 3 hours at $250 an hour, you got something terribly wrong with the technician or the stopwatch, because it shouldn't take a tech 3 hours to change the filter and the fluid in your transmission. Chip, you're up next. How can I help you?
Yeah, hi, Mark. Another great show, as always. I've got a 2001 Toyota Tacoma, 3.4 liter pre-runner body style. And I have this occasional issue in the morning. I'll back out of my drive, and when I put it into drive, it feels like it's in third or fourth gear. So if I drop it manually down, it's an automatic. When I drop it manually down into L, it goes to the low gear and seems to be all right after that. But it seems like there's some kind of a... Anyway, I'm calling to ask.
Okay, I understand what you're saying. So cold, when you throw it down into drive, it seems to want to start in second, third, or fourth. And so it's slipping a little bit, and I'm having to give it a little bit more gas, and within the next 10, 15 minutes, everything returns to normal. How many miles are on that Toyota?
150,000.
Okay. I mean, if I were you, I would take maybe
You know those little plastic cups that you get from the medical people where you put your pills in? I think they hold like an ounce.
Yes.
Okay. I want you to put like 3 ounces of brake fluid in your transmission. Because what you're describing is hard internal seals, and they're not containing the pressure first thing in the morning. And for years and years and years, we've used brake fluid, and brake fluid, all the rubber components in your brake system, one of the benefits of brake fluids is it causes the rubber components to swell slightly. So by putting in, you know, I don't know, 3, 4, 5, 6 ounces of brake fluid in your transmission, the gain is we cause the seals to swell so we're not leaking all this pressure first thing in the morning, and you say, that fixed it. On the downside, there is no downside. It's not going to hurt it. And so on all the old engines that have a cold start slipping problem, or it starts off not in first, second, or third, it starts off in third instead of first, but after it warms up, Mark, just exactly what you said, it's fine throughout the rest of the day. I think our success with brake fluid in the transmission is probably 85%.
1 minute.
Well, I'll give it a shot.
You got nothing to lose. Brake fluid's a hydraulic component. It's not going to hurt anything in your transmission. And brake fluid is in the same kind of an environment of the transmission. Yep. It's around heat. It's around clutches. It's around seals and all that kind of stuff. So it's not going to hurt it. Okay?
Great. Thank you very much.
You're welcome. 602-508-0960. The lines are wide open. There's five of them. And so I've got 20 minutes of the show left. It will be about 18 minutes when we get back from this break. But I can fit in a couple of callers. So if you'd like, 602-508-0960. We'll be right back right after this. When you run across a shop that's called Strictly Diesel Service and Repair, there's a message there. Now, Nate says, if you own a diesel and we service your diesel on a regular basis and we fix your problems and you happen to have a Chevrolet pickup truck that needs an oil change, he says, we'll do that for you. But Strictly Diesel means Strictly Diesel. Nate is so good with Chevys, Fords, and Dodges. He's up at I-17 and Pinnacle Peak Road. He's a good friend of mine. We actually compete against one another because we both modify diesels. We both do suspensions and tires and wheels and exhaust kits and all that kind of stuff. But he's really good. Nate is really good when it comes to the 5-liter, and that's a Ford motor, and into the 7.3s, which is a really good Ford motor, but it's one that was a long time ago. But Nate's really, really good with Chevy, Ford, and Dodges. So if you have a problem with that and you live in the north part of town, I-17 and Pinnacle Peak is called Strictly Diesel Service and Repair, and you'll probably talk to Nate. Let's go to the phones. John, you're up first. How can I help you?
Hey, thank you for taking it. Quick question. I got a little 93 Toyota 4x. It's got the 22RE in it. Got about 250K on it. Runs great. Done the wheel bearings once, replaced them. But I'm getting ready to repack the front wheel bearings, and they're the old style. You've got to take out, clean, and pack them. And I can't seem to be confident in any type of grease I find at O'Reilly's or AutoZone or anywhere, because I've had a bad experience with wheel bearings before where I repacked one with this so-called special synthetic grease, and after about 25,000 miles, it started making a lot of noise, took it apart, and the bearings kind of burned up. So what would you recommend for, like, the best wheel bearing grease in this old Toyota 4x? And I got new wheel bearings.
Okay.
Factory.
Well, synthetic elevates the temperature range significantly. So you're blaming it on the grease, and I'm telling you, I've done enough bad wheel bearings to know that I'm not capable of doing that except 50% of the time. Either it's going to be the wheel bearing or it's going to be the grease. Now, nine times out of ten, it's the fact that nobody ever packed the bearings, or they had the nut too tight when they went to squeeze the grease out, or when they went to torque the nut before they dropped the pin in there. And it's happened to my shop. I mean, we screw up a wheel bearing every once in a while. We just do, or we miss it. We take it apart, we clean it, but we don't roll all the rollers all the way around. But there's one roller that's come apart, and it's got a section of the chrome off of it, and we didn't see that, and that's going to contaminate that bearing, and that's going to cause the failure. We're going to have egg on our face, and we're going to have to pony up some money out of our pocket to put that truck back together. So
okay.
I think a name brand synthetic grease is the best you can hope for. Now, let me ask you a couple questions. How do you pack these?
Completely wash the bearing clean.
Okay.
And then I will put rubber gloves, put a slob of grease in my hand, and then I will push it through with force both ways, and then actually I'll do it four times, two times on each side.
Okay, I understand what you're saying. Just
coming out
the, stop. The grease is in your palm of your hand, and you're kind of scraping it on the backside of the bearing until it comes out the other side of the roller.
It through with force.
Exactly. Okay, that's what I'm trying to give everybody else. You and I know what we're talking about, but I'm trying to help everybody else.
You
pack those, and you grease the spindle, then you put the bearing in, then you put the seal behind it, and the outside bearing, you put that together. Now, tell me about the process from that point on. When you get to the nut, tell me how I handle the nut.
How I handle the nut is I'll tighten it down, and as I'm doing it, I'm spinning the rotor.
Okay.
And I try to use a position to where it was before. I mark everything before I take it off with the cotter key. Again, this is old style. It's not those nice new sealed wheel bearings. And try to get back to that point, tighten it a little over that, and then just back it off to that point.
Okay. So what he's saying, folks, is that he's going to use a wrench, and he's going to spin the rotor as he's doing these wheel bearings, and he's going to keep tightening up the wrench until he meets resistance. And then he's going to give it a little bit more resistance. And when we meet resistance, that means that we squeeze the grease out between the bearing and the seal, or the bearing and the race. That's okay. And then he's going to squeeze the grease out, and then he's going to back off just the width of the blade of the handle of his wrench or whatever. So he's going to squeeze it and then release it, drop the cotter pin, and be done with it. And I'm happy to hear that you did it that way, because I like it when you squeeze the grease out of it. I like it when you get it tight. I like all that. I think you had a wheel bearing go bad, and I think you blamed it on the grease. But you can use either one.
Okay.
I'd use a name brand either way, but it's important to know this. Wheel bearing greases are made by three companies in the United States. I don't know who they are, but I know who told me that, and I trust him because he buys parts from all these places. So really and truly, no matter what it is, and it's really not price-related, but the synthetics are more money. But the synthetics almost double the heat range. In your particular case, in my wheel bearings on my Dodge truck, you got a seal back there, too. The seal's going to be gone, long gone before the 500-degree wheel bearing lube is gone. So we're still having to deal with those temperature stuff. But at past 300 degrees, the bearing's going to go bad no matter what grease you have in it. So I don't know that just a name brand would be what I'd pick. And I like the red stuff. So that's what I would do.
All right, I'll give that a shot. Thank you very much.
All right, good luck to you. Thank you very much, too. Pat, you're up next.
It should be there.
Pat? Hi, Pat.
Mark?
Yes, sir?
Yeah, hi. I have a 2003 Chrysler Sebring LX Drive with a V6. And I bought this car as a project car, and it didn't move, so I had the transmission done on the car. And the transmission shop couldn't road test the car because they said they couldn't communicate with the computer. So I guess every time they plugged into the Obama, it didn't give them any information. So I was just wondering what your thoughts would be in reference to trying to get this car roadable. It doesn't. I actually put a 3-day temp on the car, and I drove it, and it seems to be that it's only in one gear, which is, I guess you could say, it's in third gear. So what are your thoughts?
I think this is their it's theirs to fix, is what I think. I mean, how much did they charge you to overhaul it?
Well, first of all, I couldn't get the transmission, so they
I'm saying, how much did it cost you?
$1,400.
So they charged you $1,400, and you're in no better shape than you were before.
Right.
Okay.
I'm not.
All right. So you want me to try to explain their effort to get out of their responsibility of fixing your transmission. You want me to tell you how to get them to just raise their hand and say, you're right, I didn't improve your position. It's a problem with the computer, which is what everybody says when they don't know what else to say. So you didn't tell me you weren't a good guy for the computer problems. You didn't tell me there was parameters associated with this $1,400. You took this thing apart. You put it back together. Now, do you still have the same symptoms as you had before, or different?
Well, the thing that's going on is that they couldn't get the transmission. I had to reach out on eBay to get a transmission so they could put the transmission in the car. And, you know, they didn't road test the car. They gave me back the car, and they said that they could not communicate with the transmission.
So the 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 is you had a transmission problem. You, not in conjunction with, but with the full knowledge of this shop, you got a transmission on eBay. They installed it. They charged you $1,400 to install it. Then they gave it back to you and told you it's got a computer problem. Is that the 1, 2, 3, 4, 5?
Yes.
Okay. Folks, that's exactly why you don't do what he just did. It's exactly why you don't do. You don't buy your parts and have another shop put it in because the shop always does what this shop said. Oh, it's not our problem. No one knows whose problem it is until you fix it. The only choice you have is just to go get it fixed. The question, he's saying to you, well, I can't communicate to the computer. To be honest with you, on an 03 Sebring, you don't need to communicate to the transmission. You plug and play that thing. You put the transmission in, you connect all the connectors, and there should be an automatic data loop between the two of them. So the guy that's out here in Never Never Land, we've got the guy who rebuilt this transmission that sold it to you, or whatever he did to it, he's out there, and so now you don't know if it's the computer, if it's the data link, or if it's inside one of the sensors, or one of the worker bees, one of the solenoids, is not working. So you're in a real big pickle. I don't think you're going to find another shop that's going to take this, because nobody wants to be involved, but I will tell you this. I think you should, if there is a shop in town, you might go sweet talk Phil over at Automatic Transmission Exchange and tell him, if I were you, this is how I'd handle it. Phil, Mark Salem said you probably won't take this, but let me tell you real quick. I'd like to bring my 03 Sebring over. I bought a transmission on eBay. I had a shop put it in, and then they say they can't get it to work because it's not talking to the computer. And so, Phil, is that something that you can look at, and can you give me some kind of financial parameters to where, you know, can you check it out? Can you diagnose it? Can you give me an estimate? What's it going to cost to have you give me an estimate to fix it? Because the problem's going to be the transmission doesn't belong in your car. The transmission is defective inside. The transmission doesn't have sensors, a sensor that belongs on your car, because your 03 had 4 sensors and the 05 had 3. And so they gave you a 3-sensor 05 for a 4-sensor car. Those are the kinds of problems that you have. But just talk to Phil at the Automatic Transmission Exchange. If anybody can pull a rabbit out of his hat, it'll be him. But to be honest with you, he's not going to work for free, and he's not going to discount it because he feels sorry for you or he feels sorry for the other shop. I mean, he's the one with the magic wand. And he's not going to take advantage of you either. I promise you that. He's not going to take advantage of you. So he may very well just say, bring it on down, and I'll call you with an estimate. And the diagnostic process is going to cost you, hypothetically, $150. For $150, I'll know what I need to do. And at that particular point, I'll call you and give you an estimate. So that's how
Where's
I would handle
located?
It. Say that again.
Where's he located?
He's down on Washington and 40th Street.
That's in Phoenix, right?
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
Okay, great. I appreciate it so much, sir.
All right. Good luck. Good luck. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you so much.
All righty. Folks, you can't do that. You can't have somebody rebuild your carburetor and then take it to a shop and have them install it. And now you have a series of problems. And the guy that installed it said, I just installed it. The problem you have is a carburetor-related problem. The carburetor guy goes, it was fine when it left here, which I would say to him, how the heck do you know it was fine when it left here? It hadn't been on the car yet. So when you do a carburetor overhaul, here's the important part. You take the carburetor apart, and you have specific problems with the carburetor, specific symptoms. It won't start cold. The accelerator pump is intermittent. It has no wide-open throttle. It won't pass emissions. It's running really rich on the idle circuits. It's running really rich on the cruise circuits. You have all of these things going on with the carburetor. When you go in to fix it, then you put it back on, all of those things have to be gone. And I'm going to tell you right now, there ain't no 18-year-old kid out of auto mechanics in high school that's going to build a quadrajet and fix it right based on symptoms.
But the old gray-haired guys have been around a long time, and they know how to do that. So you just don't do, you don't take apart, you don't go buy a Quadrajet or a Holley carburetor for your Ford or an AFB for your Dodge. You don't take it to a shop and say, put it on, and then hold that shop responsible for the performance of the carburetor you do. Many of us won't even do that. There are customers of mine that have been around in my shop and been customers of mine for 10, 20, 30 years, and I probably would bend the rules every now and then for one of them, knowing full well it's going to turn out bad. But sometimes I can be a hero, and sometimes we can be a hero, and sometimes we'll find it and fix it and charge them a reasonable amount that's fair to us and fair to him. And perhaps explain what was wrong, and maybe he can go back to the guy who rebuilt the carburetor or who rebuilt the transmission and have him financially participate in this fiasco. But our industry is a lot better than that. I'm surrounded by really good shops that know right from wrong, but many of them also know that when you walk in the door and you've got a story that starts with, that guy rebuilt this, and then I took it over here, and then I took it here, and now it's at your shop. Then they say, what's your labor rate? The answer typically is going to be, well, we're $400 an hour. And you got to say it with a straight face. And they go, $400 an hour? The message there is, I'm not doing this for you. I'm going to hit you between the eyes with a huge number, and you're going to walk away and you're going to say, Salem is expensive as all hell. There's nobody else in town that's $400 an hour. Well, Salem told you $400 an hour because he doesn't want that car. Because at the end of the day, he's going to be like Judge Judy between the guy who sold the transmission, the guy who rebuilt the transmission, the guy who installed the transmission. So if I fix it, now all of a sudden I'm in the middle of all of it, and those three guys are sniping at me because they say, Salem, that's not true. Salem said this, and I had that part of the transmission, and I did it right. Well, Salem fixed it. That's all there is to it. Salem fixed it. So none of us want to do that. And that opportunity probably walks in our door once a month, or even more than that. And it's just something that we don't have time to do. I don't need to be the Judge Judy, and there's lots of guys out there. Blackwell and 25th Street Auto and Dave Martins and Harkers. None of us want to do that. We just don't want to be involved in those kinds of things. So just try to avoid, try to have one shop do one thing and be responsible for the whole thing. Now, every once in a while, the shop will subcontract, and they might send your rack and pinion out to be rebuilt. If they tell you they're going to do that, then don't let them step aside and put you in touch with the rebuilder. They stay in the middle. They stay in the middle. So if there's a problem, then the shop and the rebuilder are the ones that work it out. Doesn't happen often, but when it does, it always gets ugly. Mark@MarkSalem.com is my email address. Mark@MarkSalem.com. If you have a question or something, you can always send me an email and give me a phone number where I can give you a call back. And I do from a blocked line, so you have to know that I'm going to come through at a blocked line. And if I call and you don't answer, I wait 5 minutes and I call you back. We'll see you next week.